Always a great podcast. Monday is no different for people who are pissed at Bill O'Reilly on Friday. Make sure you're listening today. Also, we talk about Scotland and the incredible, beautiful things that are being done for our planet and so much more. Don't miss a second of today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
We have some good news for you. The time has expired for a lot of people to be able to continue working after the 22nd with your vaccines. So, you know what I find interesting is I think that the federal mandate on the vaccines being November 22nd is just such a huge coincidence that it's the week of Thanksgiving. I just don't think it's going to cause any kind of slowdowns with the airports at all. I don't think it's going to cause any kind of problems.
And Biden doesn't have a record at all of pointing out significant dates for his ridiculous policies. Like, we're going to pull out of Afghanistan by 9/11.
Right.
Remember that whole thing?
Yeah.
He does
yeah.
this all the time.
Yeah, that's all accident. Weird coincidence. Liz Wheeler is with us, host of the Liz Wheeler Show. She has found that there's a problem with the U.S. Navy on the mandates. Welcome, Liz. How are you?
Glenn, thanks for having me. I'm good.
You bet. So tell me what you have found with the Navy.
Yeah, this is so egregious. As someone who comes from a military family, I'm part of a military family, huge supporter of the U.S. military. But man, when there's wrongdoing, they have so much power over people's lives. It's terrible. I've obtained documents that show that at least at one command, a rather large command in the U.S. Navy, they are violating policy by preparing to issue blanket denials of requests for religious exemption. And this is a violation in several ways, but the specific policy states that when someone asks for an accommodation, a religious accommodation, particularly as it pertains to immunization, that the command or the chain of command is required to evaluate this on a case-by-case basis. It needs to be looked at the chaplain first, then it moves up the chain of command. It, like I said, if it's related to immunization, it goes all the way up to the chief of naval personnel, who is a three-star rear admiral in the Navy. And what I found is that there is a template, a document that is being used and being given to this command that is telling the CO, who is an O5, an officer, to issue these blanket denials. And on this template, there's no place to fill in a request that has been approved. There's only a place to fill in a request that's been denied and not on a case-by-case basis. So these people who are serving and sacrificing, who have sworn to uphold the Constitution, they are not having their constitutional rights upheld by their own chain of command.
So I'm looking at the documents that you have here. So somebody who is in the Navy says, I have a religious objection to this. They have to go to the chaplain, and then what happens to them?
Correct. So the actual chain of command, as it relates just to immunizations, not other religious accommodations, it goes to the chaplain for endorsement, and then it goes to the commander of the command, which would be an O5. Then it goes to the first O6, which would be a captain level in the Navy, the first O6 on the chain of command, and then it skips over everyone else and goes directly to this three-star general, the chief of naval personnel. And what appears, and this is, I should phrase this as a question. Based on the clues that we see in these papers, one has to ask, or one has to wonder why this exemption template was authored by the JAG officer, who is a lawyer, of a two-star general who is outside this very specific chain of command as it relates to exemption requests for immunizations. Because this individual has power over up to 50,000 naval sailors around the world. And if he's being this hostile towards people requesting religious exemptions, you have to wonder how high this goes and how widespread this is.
So this should have gone to the or come from the attorney for the three-star, not the two-star, because the two-star has nothing to do with this chain of command for religious exemption.
That's what it would appear, yes. It would appear that's certainly, I think, what Congress should inquire if this is happening. Perhaps the things that we have, the absolute proof of what's happening, is that the 06 directed the O5, who's the commander at this at Iwitsi Quarry Station. That's the name of the command. Directed the O5 to issue this blanket denial. And the affidavits that you see in front of you, the affidavits are from some sailors who heard the commander say, "I didn't want to issue these blanket commands, but I was forced to by my superior officer, the O6." That we have proof that that has happened, and that is in direct violation of Navy policy.
So what are the kinds of religious exemptions that are happening? Are there any? And which kinds are acceptable? Because we're hearing all kinds of things like, unless you are with, who is it, like Christian Scientists, you're not going to be able to get this waiver.
Well, to my knowledge, and up until this moment, I don't believe the U.S. Navy has issued a single religious exemption or has issued a single religious exemption for the COVID-19 vaccine. I could be out of date. They might have sent some out this morning. I don't know. But up until my most recent knowledge, they have not issued a single exemption. And it's kind of an unspoken, an open secret, if you will, in the Navy that these requests are going to be denied. But here's the thing. Here's where it gets constitutional. Here's where there's Supreme Court precedent. The Navy has the burden to show that if they are going to violate someone's sincerely held religious belief, that they do so, they violate it in the least restrictive way possible. As I said, this is the Supreme Court precedent. Well, we have documents in that Twitter thread that I showed that the previous CO of this command said that they fulfilled their mission. The Navy at this command fulfilled their mission 100% during the height of the pandemic, which means that 0% of the service members were vaccinated. So it would be an awfully hard argument to make now that 99% of the service members are vaccinated at this command, that it would be necessary to achieve the mission to violate. I think there's 20 people total who are asking for these exemptions. So when you compare the idea that they achieved what they needed to achieve with 100 or with 0% vaccination versus this burden that the Navy has to prove that it's necessary to achieve their mission in order to violate these people's rights. It doesn't add up. It's just hostility. They just have an agenda. It seems that they don't want to approve these, which is why they're neglecting their responsibility.
So how many people do you think are actually going to stand and say, I'm not going to take it? What percentage of Navy Marines are we looking at that are just going to refuse it, do you think?
I don't know. And here's why. Because when you're in the military, you don't have the same freedom to just quit your job the way that you do in the private sector. If you come up against a roadblock like this that, you know, violates your conscience, you don't have that. You don't have that same freedom. And so the repercussions for people in the Navy who refuse a direct order, and this is a direct order from the DOD, these repercussions can be long lasting and devastating, not just to your naval career. You could lose your benefits. You could lose your retirement. I don't know how they plan to enforce this if people outright refuse, if their exemptions are also denied. But I mean, you could theoretically, under the legal structure of the military, face court-martial. So I'm not sure how many people would be willing to face prison time for something like this, or if the Navy and the military would go to that extent. I'm trying to do what I can, you know, to be a voice for the voiceless, because they don't have the same freedom that you have in the private sector. I'm trying to expose the wrongdoing, because they really deserve Navy policy itself to be followed, and that their religious requests for accommodation to be evaluated with the sincerity that they submitted them.
Why do you think they're doing it? I mean, I could go down a conspiracy theory that road that I don't think it would be hard to accept for people. You know, they've been going after, you know, anybody that they think is a radical in the service. And the way they define radical is anybody who doesn't believe in the policies of the Democratic Party or who believes in the policies of Donald Trump or whatever. This is a way to get rid of 10% of the hardcore right, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. I mean, and this is the same with the vaccine mandate in the private sector for federal employees or federal contractors, right? I mean, what better administrative state than one that doesn't include anybody who thinks for themselves, any independent thinkers? And so, like I said, in the private sector, you have you have the autonomy or the agency to quit your job and leave that position. So what better way to eradicate anybody working for the federal government who is a conservative, who doesn't want this vaccine, who thinks for themselves, who knows that the Biden administration is rejecting science? That's certainly true at the federal government level. And it's also true in the military as well. I mean, when the Biden administration took over the White House, when he was inaugurated president, they immediately took action in the military and they implemented these extremist training briefings, which are essentially the same anti-racist woke garbage that paints conservatives as potential domestic terrorists and white men as these evil patriarchal oppressors. And this is what they're indoctrinating military members with. This is what officers are required to teach to their subordinates. They're required to brainwash those under their command. And this hostility is seeping into the depths of the military. It is, of course, coming from the top down, from the commander in chief, the Biden administration, through this military brass. But what happens then is the people that end up being left in charge, the people who are willing to do this, are the ones who get promoted. And that's, I think, where you see this hostility mm-hmm. towards religion come in the case of the religious exemption for the vaccine.
What's next, Liz?
I don't know, but if you look at that document, there's a very interesting, it's called a chop sheet. It's essentially a correspondence tracker where officers write advice for their superiors. And when one of the officers was evaluating one of the arguments that a sailor made in favor of his religious exemption, he was citing obviously the fetal cell lines that were used in the testing of the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine. And on this chop sheet was just this gross hostility, this animus towards pro-lifers in general, painting this sailor as an extremist. I think he called it an alarming narrative in his absurd argument. And it just seems that if you're conservative and you're Christian, you know, you believe in the sanctity of life, you believe in science, there seems to be less of a place for you in the United States military than there used to be.
All right. Where do we find all of this information? Can we go to the LizWheelerShow.com?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I did a full episode on this, breaking down all the documents. I did a massive Twitter thread so that everyone could have access to it. But the best place is really to go to LizWheelerShow.com or go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to your pods.
And it's the episode, it calls for a congressional inquiry, episode 68?
Correct.
Okay, good.
Correct, yes, good. Yes, episode 68. And in Congress should. They have the duty of oversight, and they should use it.
Have you heard from any of the, you know, usual players on the conservative side, the Ted Cruz's of the world, or have you heard from any of them?
Yes, I've had multiple members of Congress reach out to me. Multiple members of Congress have actually spoken publicly about this already, you know, whether it's on their social media accounts. There's stuff happening behind the scenes, but I'm not the only one, of course, that are worried about this. And you wouldn't believe the amount of emails that I've been receiving from people in the military talking about other examples of similar discrimination against them since I published this story.
Liz Wheeler, thank you so much. The LizWheelerShow.com is where you can find it. Thanks, Liz. We'll keep in touch with you. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Justin Haskins is the editorial director for the Heartland Institute, editor-in-chief of StoppingSocialism.com, and he is the co-author of the new book you should order right now, and it is called The Great Reset. This is my new book. Let me grab it here. This is my new book that is coming out in January. Joe Biden and the Rise of the 21st Century Fascism, The Great Reset. You can find it on Amazon. Pre-order it now. Do it now so you make sure you get your copy. This is kind of an important thing to say because of the problem with the supply chain. If you order them now, you'll make sure you get it by the first week that it is out. Sometimes we're afraid of running out of these because they will take 5 months for a reprint because of the supply chain. So please order your copy now. It comes out early January. It's my new book, The Great Reset. Justin, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Glenn. It's good to be with you.
So every time every time we talk, it's usually after a few days where I'm like, gosh, this should all be in the book, too. I mean, it's moving so incredibly fast. So let's start at the beginning. Glasgow is all about climate change. And the one thing we learned about the Paris Climate Accords was that's not the important part of what happened in Paris, correct?
That's right. So back in 2015, when we had COP21, this is now COP26 in Glasgow, everyone was focused on the Paris Climate Agreement. Everyone was focused on the terms that these governments were coming up with that really didn't have any teeth to them in many cases, when they should have been paying attention to what was going on behind the scenes between corporations and activist groups and banks and financial institutions and investors. That was where the real action was occurring. And what we now know of as the Great Reset, much of that framework, not all of it, but much of it was actually being built in Paris while the world was paying attention to the Paris Climate Agreement. And a lot of us, including people who are critics of all of this, including people like you and me, we missed it because we weren't paying attention to these other meetings that were occurring at the same time where the real action actually is. That's what we need to stay focused on with Glasgow.
Okay, and so Glasgow has the Financial Alliance for Net Zero. This is what happened last week. And there's some things, and I just want you to explain these if you can. GFANZ, what is that? G-F-A-N-Z.
Right. So that's an acronym standing for the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero.
Okay.
This is a group of coalitions of people in the financial industry globally.
So these are the banks, and there was how many banks? 84 banks met in Glasgow last week, right?
There's 84 banks that are meeting, and they're meeting this week, I believe. But
okay.
Yeah, the 84 banks in as part of the Net Zero Banking Alliance. But there are insurance companies involved in this. There are investment groups involved in this. And they're all part of these other sub-alliances that all fall underneath the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero.
Just so you know, the NZIA is the Net Zero Insurance Alliance. The NZAOA is the Net Zero Asset Owner Alliance. What is that?
This is going to be like pension funds and some
Got
investment
it.
Groups, things like that.
Okay, so that's like Blackstone.
Well, BlackRock and things, BlackRock might be included under that. If they're not under that, they're under one of the other groups.
Okay, all right. So 84 banks, 36 countries, they control $64 trillion in assets. What have they pledged to do?
What they're pledging to do is they're pledging to remove all of fossil fuels from their entire portfolios. This means not just their own companies. We're not talking about, well, they're pledging to get rid of fossil fuels and put solar panels on the roof of the corporate headquarters. We're talking about them saying that they are pledging not to allow anyone in their company to do business with people who are engaged in using fossil fuels, including getting loans, including having bank accounts, including in the case of insurance companies, they won't insure you. And again, it's not just are you in the fossil fuel industry? We're talking about, are you totally committed to battling climate change regardless of what your business is? This is an attempt to force the entire global economy, essentially, especially in the West, to adopt climate change policies that the Joe Biden administration and others want.
And the other thing is it will affect you if you're just a homeowner. If you haven't zip stripped everything, if you haven't put, the kind of insulation that they want, the roofing, if you haven't put solar panels up, et cetera, or if you're trying to buy a house and it doesn't include those things, these banks will say that's not a green house and you'll have to make it green to either sell it or to buy it, right?
Well, it's going to either happen from the banks or from the insurance companies or from both, right? Because if you're going to get a mortgage, you have to first get an insurance company to say that they're going to insure your house. But if the insurance company says, we're not going to insure your house because you're not committed to climate change, there's no solar panels on the roof, so we'll only insure it once you put solar panels on the roof, then you won't be able to get the mortgage from the bank, even if the bank doesn't care. So they're hitting you from all sorts of different angles here to make sure that you comply. That's the long-term goal.
And this is, honestly, you know, the Great Reset, the goal is you won't own anything by 2030. This is a way to force people out of their homes. I mean, if you have a home and it's not deemed green, you'll lose your insurance. And so you won't be able to continue to live in your house. You'll have to sell it to somebody, most likely like a Blackstone that is willing to, or BlackRock, that is willing to go in and greenify whole neighborhoods. This is what AOC said: when we're going to green all of the infrastructure, all homes, all businesses in America. They're not doing it through handouts. They're going to be doing it through pressure on the individual, and most individuals won't be able to afford it.
Right. And that's the key part of this, right, is that even if you have people who might want to go along with this stuff, or they don't care and they just want to, you won't be able to afford it. So the reason you see Blackstone and BlackRock and a bunch of other groups buying up lots of real estate and property, way overpaying what the property is worth, some cases they're paying 50% more than what the asking price is because they know that over the next 20 or 30 years, that property is going to become so much more valuable than it is right now. And they'll be able to charge rent at rates that are twice what they are today or more, because people are not going to be able to afford to buy their own property.
And you know what's crazy?
What groups are preparing for that?
What's crazy, Justin, is they've made evil landowners. They've made them look like these evil people that just are ripping people off. When a lot of people who buy rental houses and then rent them out are not rich, nor are they evil, but that's the system they're creating, that it will only be the really rich people like Blackstone that will own these things. And they know going in, these houses are going to be unaffordable for most people, and you won't have a choice. I mean, we are sitting at the Mr. Potter kind of moment where we're either picking for Jimmy Stewart and the local bank, or we're going Mr. Potter's way, and the country will be Pottersville.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And that's what made all of these policies that made it impossible for people to evict individuals who weren't paying their rent so damaging, is that those were the small time people who were really hurt by that. That wasn't the BlackRocks and the Blackstones, these big, massive corporations that have billions of dollars in the bank. They can afford to eat those losses for a little while people aren't paying their rent. But just the guy who has a couple of rental properties and he's got income on the side, or that's his primary income, that person can't afford to lose that income for a whole year.
Mm-hmm.
And so it drove all of those people out of business, in some cases into bankruptcy. It forced them to sell those properties to companies like Blackstone and BlackRock. All of this wealth and property and stock and all of these things are being consolidated, and it's gotten worse and worse and worse since COVID happened, but it's been happening for a while. And that's really what all of this is about. When they talk about you not being able to own property, it's not that they're just going to seize the property from you. It's that they're going to put all these policies into place. They've already done it, that are going to push most people out of the possibility of being able to own it for one reason or another. And the only people that will be able to control it are these big, gigantic corporations, investment managers, banks, who are all on board with the policies that the elites want.
If you want to make a change, if you don't like this direction, you must get your money out of these banks. The Amalgamated Bank, that's the largest union bank, SEIU, in the country. Bank of America, Citi, JP Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and Wells Fargo. These are the seven largest and most influential banks in the United States that have joined the alliance, three of them last month alone. Amalgamated Bank, Bank of America, Citi, JP Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and Wells Fargo. Get your money into a local bank. If you just say, well, I'll do that some other time, They are making these policies right now. And if America doesn't start saying, you're not getting any of my money, you're not getting any of my money, you are part of the problem, and put them into the smaller banks, because the smaller banks are going to be gobbled by these big banks. They're going to be run out of business because they won't have an opportunity. They won't have the money to do all of the stuff that these big seven banks know they won't have the money. So you've got to take your money out of their coffers and let them know they have a financial fight in front of them. We're not just going to go along with this. Do it this week. Okay, so I want to go to a couple of people. Let me start with Mark Carney. Mark Carney is in our new book that is coming out in January. Please order it right now so you can guarantee to get it when it comes out in early January. It's called The Great Reset, and Justin is my co-author on that. Justin, let's go over who Carney is. Mark Carney.
Sure. So Mark Carney is the head of this Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, okay, that we were just talking about. 300 firms have already signed on to this Glasgow Alliance. They control $90 trillion in assets if you look at all the different firms who are involved in it. Carney is an incredibly powerful person in the banking and financial industries. The guy used to be the governor of the Bank of Canada, used to be the governor of the Bank of England. He worked at Goldman Sachs for a long time, like over 10 years, I think. He's right now advising Boris Johnson, the head of the prime minister in the United Kingdom, and he's the UN special envoy for climate action and finance. Okay, so he's a major player in all of this. Carney, immediately, when I found out that he was the head of this this Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, it immediately sparked this memory that I had of doing all this research about Mark Carney for the book, because Carney is one of the major people calling for getting rid of the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency.
Correct.
Meaning the currency that people use globally to buy oil and commodities and other things, and instead to go to a currency that is a digital currency controlled by an international body like the International Monetary Fund or something like that.
And really, hang on just a second. Really important time. That this is not we're not talking about a national currency. The minute our dollar, no matter what form it's in, goes to an international dollar as a world reserve currency, America loses. You become at least a second world country and possibly a third world country, just straddled with debt literally overnight.
That's right. And it would cause, I believe, and there are a lot of other economists that believe this, I know you believe this, it would cause a Great Depression-like collapse here in the United States if that were to actually occur, because you have all these dollars around the world that need to go somewhere, and a lot of those dollars are going to come back to the United States. You're going to have massive amounts of inflation. You're going to have foreign entities and governments buying up property all over the place in the United States because they have nowhere else to spend their dollars. It's going to cause a huge perception problem. It's going to be sort of the moment that the global financial community realizes the United States is not the major player in the world anymore, and we are going to have a massive financial economic crash if this actually occurs. And this is what Mark Carney wants. He's actually calling for this. He wants this because he says the United States has too much power in the international community. We are too reliant on the dollar. Instead, we should have a basket of currencies that has a tied to a digital currency that global elites can control at places like the United Nations and elsewhere. The specifics of it, we don't know. But that's what he ultimately wants. That's one of the main things he wants. And he's the one that's leading this committee, this Global Financial Alliance for Net, or Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, that is trying to reshape the entire global economy by imposing its will through the financial system.
It's also important to realize, because we are showing you that this is all part of Build Back Better, which is the slogan for the Great Reset, which comes from the World Economic Forum. Well, Carney is a member on the board of directors of the World Economic Forum. So not only is he involved in all of these other countries and the race to zero with the global financial markets net zero race, he's also a guy who's on the board of directors of the Economic Forum. So anyone who says that this is not connected, they don't know the facts. They just don't know the facts. These meetings this week are incredibly important. Are we past the point of no return yet?
I think we're very, very close. I think we're very, very close.
Okay. You need to act today. Today. And you tell your bank as you're pulling your money and transferring it to a local bank, you tell them, because they're part of the Net Zero Banking Alliance that is forming in Glasgow. Again, Amalgamated Bank, Bank of America, Citi, JP Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and Wells Fargo. Put your money in a locally owned bank.
This is the Best of the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to take very seriously a lot of complaints that came in on Friday, but I want to address it in two parts. Bill O'Reilly was on, and he said some things that I strongly disagree with, but, you know, Bill and I disagree on a lot of things. This one was a pretty big disagreement, but the audience reacted differently than I did. Chris wrote in, tough decision. I have a heavy heart. I'm sad to say it has come to this. As I respect you, I think you're a great human. Bill has a stance of the unvaccinated that made my blood boil. Keep up your efforts, but I'm done listening to you. Dale and Claudia wrote in, we have listened to you for almost 20 years. Today with the Bill O'Reilly segment, we're done listening on Fridays. He was disgusting and arrogant, sounded like a Nazi. I think I kind of said that in a nice way. Nothing more can be said, and please don't defend him, as that would need for us to reconsider listening at all. I will defend him. I won't defend his policy, but I will defend Bill O'Reilly. Kathy Myers, I will no longer support Bill O'Reilly, argued that losing a great percentage of our infrastructure, first responders, firefighters, healthcare providers, could be a matter of public health, that police could be identified with a mask as unvaccinated so they will know who is unvaxxed so you can stay away. This just goes on and on and on. So I called Bill and said, hey, Bill, let's talk about this. Now, here's the one part that I there's two parts in this. Before we get to Bill's opinion, the reason why I'm doing this is because I don't like sweeping things under the rug. If something has happened on the show, we address it because we're all adults. The other thing is, just because we disagree with somebody, and in Bill's case, usually 80% agree, and this is a big one on disagree, but 80% agree, we are not the people that cancel people. I don't want to cancel people. I want to continue to listen to people who have different ideas and see if we can influence their thinking and also hear what the other side is saying. There are a lot of people in the country that agree with Bill. I am not one of them, but I think we should hear the other side. And we have a diminishing amount of friends because of what is happening in the world. And I am not willing to make enemies out of friends. I want to continue the conversation. That's what this show is. We've tried to always stand for. We don't always meet those high ideals, but we're going to try it today. Bill O'Reilly, welcome back to the program, sir.
More enlightenment. I'm getting enlightenment twice this week.
Yes.
Unless you cancel me on Friday.
Yeah, well.
And that's excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent enlightenment. Thank
yeah.
you.
So, Bill.
Yeah.
You said some pretty crazy things on Friday. Here, let me just refresh your memory.
Yes, okay.
All right. How do you take 10% of the population and say, no job for
this
you?
This is recording from Friday.
And expect
well,
that to
right
work.
Now,
wait.
It's happening.
But wait. Bill, hold on just a second. Here's your response.
Happening even as we speak where I am.
I know.
So in New York City, they're going to lose 25% of the cops. and about 18% of the firefighters.
What does that do to the city? And I mean, there's not a greater group of people that deserve that.
Who are the happiest people in the world today? The gangs who can go out and commit crime.
Correct. Well,
they can commit crimes now at will anyway, but it's 50% easier to do it today and over the Halloween weekend. So look, I'm sympathetic to the fascist element of this.
Okay,
I understand.
Stop for a second. You're not saying that you're sympathetic to fascists. You're sympathetic to the people who think this is fascism, right?
No, I was thinking, look, let me define what I said. And
okay,
again,
all right, okay.
People hear what they want to hear.
Okay.
It's not what I said. I'm not for mandates, okay? And I made that quite clear. So anybody who wrote into you and said,
I don't think you did make that quite clear. I didn't get that. Okay.
Because I gave you a solution. I gave you a solution to go around the mandates.
But right, but your
mandates are number one, I don't think they're fair, and number two, I don't think they're constitutional in the private sector.
Okay, but your solution was that you would have the police not force people to have vaccines, but they'd have to wear a mask, so no one would trust
that. If they were unvaxxed.
Right. So no one would trust that police officer, which I think is a really bad idea.
Right. So you and I disagree. So let me ask you some questions.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm taking over the Glenn Beck Show. It's a thrill for me to be
here.
Well,
it is. It is good to hear your humility on this.
Number one.
Yes. Go ahead.
You're vaxxed, right?
I am not vaxxed.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you were vaxxed.
No, I'm for vaccine if you want it, but I had a really bad case of the vaccine.
COVID. How about your family?
Some of my family members are. One of my older children and her husband are vaxxed. We all had it, though. We all had COVID, all of us.
You all had COVID. All right. Mm-hmm. So do you believe that the vaccine brings down cases of COVID? Do you, Glenn Beck, believe that?
Yeah, I think there's plenty of evidence to show that it brings down.
Good. All right. Mm-hmm. So we're simpatico.
Mm-hmm.
Vaccine brings down the level.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are in New York City. We have 8.5 million people living in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
8.5 million people. The government of New York, which is awful and terrible, they have decided that everybody who works for the city has to be vaccinated for two reasons. Number one, so they don't, it's the level of COVID goes down for city workers. And number two, because they want to send a message that everybody in the city should get the vax.
Okay, stop for a second.
Go ahead.
You look at the numbers in Florida going down. That also can be done by herd.
But the vaccinations in Florida went up. Now, I support DeSantis pass and the Florida legislature in Tallahassee and in Texas as well, passing laws against mandates. I supported that. And I don't think your audience, because, again, people hear what they want to hear. I don't think they know that. But I have a solution, and I gave it to you on Friday in New York, that if you don't get vaxxed and the city council says you're going to get fired unless you take the vax, which I don't think is right, that a compromise could be reached. And that is that you get COVID tested twice a week at your own expense, and that people in the public, dealing with the public, all right, would wear masks if they weren't vaxxed.
Okay, stop.
So the public would know.
Okay, but
so the public would know who was vaxxed and who wasn't.
Right. Like, as I pointed out on Friday, like the Yellow Star.
But this isn't for civilians. This is for people who are in your face. Okay? It's not for everybody. It's just for city workers who interact with the public. So doesn't the public not have a right to know in a contagion situation All right. Who is vaxxed and who is not? Does the public have a right to know?
No.
You don't think so?
No, I don't. Here's why, Bill. Right. Here's why. Here's why. First, Americans don't want the government telling them what to do. Okay. That's the worst thing. You want to get people vaxxed, you don't do that. They want to make their own healthcare decisions. My body, my choice. They want to be able to maintain the ability to assess the risk in their own lives. And when you are...
But that goes for non-vax people, too. I mean, it goes for people who are vaccinated, but, who believe the vaccination protects them. They get the same rights.
Okay, so isn't this the... Well, then why don't they just wear a sticker that says... I mean, they're the ones that believe in the mask in the first place. As you said on Friday, when I said the mask
don't
work...
I don't believe in the mask. This is against the mask.
Right.
I'm not a mask guy.
So then why are you saying that if you didn't...
reach a compromise rather than wiping out 20% of the police department so that the criminals run wild, you could reach a compromise with the union.
Okay, so here it is.
And that's all I was saying.
Okay, so here it is. Your compromise is those people who do get the vaccine wear the mask so everyone knows who's vaccinated. You're asking people who don't believe...
Only if they're interacting with the public, because the public has a right to know if the person is vaccinated or not, if they have to interact with them.
Okay.
There are rights on the other side.
All right. So let me ask you this. What is the limiting principle on this? What stops the government from doing the same thing under the common good with now climate change or gun violence?
No, look, it's a public health situation. Which
so
makes it
is
unique.
So is climate change.
Wait,
so
wait,
is
back.
Gun violence.
Let's go. No, it's not.
That's what they're saying.
Well, they are stupid. Okay? Gun violence is driven by criminals. It's not driven by guns.
But that's not what they... I mean, you
it
now have
matter.
The Department of Health. It does. They're in charge. You can't open this door because you don't know what's behind the next door. And they're already saying these
the
are public...
slope.
Yes.
Look... Okay, in theory, that's fine. But every court in the country has ruled that in a public health situation, you have to get vaxxed for measles if you want to go to public school.
But it took us 6 years.
And polio. Polio. And a bunch of other stuff.
I know. Polio took us 6 years to get to 56%. And that's when kids were not walking.
The media wasn't. Is sophisticated. Look, let's just break this down. Okay, I support states like Texas and Florida saying mandates are illegal. Number one, I don't support private companies saying to all of their employees, you have to be vaccinated or you can't work here. I think that's wrong. Okay, they can do that, they have a right to do it, but I think it's wrong. However, and this is where your letters are coming in, I also support the right of people to know who's unvaccinated because there is a contagion. In New York City, if you didn't have the strict public health laws they have, you'd never get over this pandemic. It would never stop. Because
there's
too many people on
Florida.
Top of one another.
Florida.
There's not any place in Florida that corresponds to New York City.
No, but you, again, you are dismissing the idea that there is that your body makes immunity. Your body, what does the virus, what does a vaccine do? A vaccine tricks your body into making antibodies. So it files that information.
No government in the world can evaluate antibodies. They can't do it. This is the path of least resistance to trying to tamp down and destroy a pandemic, and it's working. The vaccines are working. Wherever vaccinations go up, cases of COVID go down. There's a front page article in the Wall Street Journal today. Now, I understand, and I'm a champion of individual rights in this country. I am a champion. And I don't, like you, trust particularly now, the governments that we have in most places. I don't trust Joe Biden. I certainly don't trust the New York authorities. They're not looking out for anybody. All right, they're trying to impose a catastrophic agenda on the American people, which includes totalitarianism and socialism. And we've talked about this on your program. All right, but I also understand there is danger from COVID.
Yeah, so do I.
So that we all have to be reasonable in how we confront that danger.
So I'm up against a break. I have to go, but we'll talk about this some more. Our difference is that I think the danger from an out of control government is currently worse than the idea that everyone has to be mandated because of COVID. I think the idea that you are making pariahs out of 10, 15, 20%, even 5% of the population is a very dangerous idea. And giving the government this power, all they really have to do is say, we highly recommend it and you can make your own choice. We're already over 80%. We were clearly on the way up. This really kicked back when people started to say, wait a minute, you're forcing me? That doesn't seem right.